From WXXI News, this is Connections. I'm Evan Dawson. Our connection this hour was made in the 1980s when a woman needed help conceiving a child. Donor conception is not uncommon, but it can be the source of confusion and mystery for children who become adults not knowing who, for example, their biological father is. In this story that began in the 1980s, a boy named Carl was born. He grew up being told that his biological father was Italian and died at the age of 36, but it now appears that was a lie. CJ Lohr is now 35 years old, and he is one of at least two adults claiming that a local doctor used his own sperm to artificially inseminate their mothers. That doctor is local OBGYN Dr. Morris Wortman. Carl came closer to the truth 3 years ago. As 13 Wham News reported, Carl used an ancestral DNA test to find out that his father was not Italian, but Jewish, and there were strong indications that he had numerous half-siblings that he had never met. When Lohr showed the DNA test to his mother, he says she finally admitted that Dr. Wortman was the father. Lohr was shocked. He says he was in a very rough emotional place for 2 years. There were questions about maybe his own background with mental health and what his biological father's background was, things that might have been misconstrued to him for decades. Meanwhile, his apparent half-sister is now suing for fraud and malpractice. At the heart of the story is a question of identity and rights. What rights does a person have to learn who their biological parents are? Advocates have been pushing for changes to grant more rights to everyone, especially people who were donor conceived. We should note we reached out to Dr. Wortman, but we have not received a reply. The conversation this hour will touch specifically on allegations regarding Dr. Wortman, but also more generally on important themes to people who are donor conceived, rights of all people, rights about understanding parentage, etc. But I will say, even though we haven't heard back from Dr. Wortman, I just kind of want to say from the beginning here that Dr. Wortman may decide to push back against certain allegations. He may not. I don't know. But that's the caveat. That's all I can really say from his perspective. Our guests with us this hour, Greg Franklin is with me in studio, an adoptions and assisted fertility attorney with Ashcraft, Franklin & Young. Greg, welcome. Thank you for being here.
Thanks for asking me.
CJ Lohr is a Rochester resident who I was just talking about, says he's the biological child of Dr. Morris Wortman. And CJ, I really appreciate you making the time for us. How are you?
I'm doing well. Thanks for having me.
Welcome to Lindsay Roble, who's a guest we had on last spring to discuss donor conception, who also happens to have been a patient of Dr. Wortman's. Lindsay, welcome back to the program.
Hi, thanks so much for having me again, Evan.
And Tyler Brown is a reporter with 13 Wham News who helped break some of this reporting. Tyler, welcome. Thanks for being with us.
Thank you so much for having me, Evan.
I'm not going to keep Tyler very long. He's busy. He's off working with 13 Wham, but I asked him to come on because WXXI News has not reported individually yet on this story, and we want to bring in a reporter who has spent some time with it. So I referred to some of your work off the top of the show, Tyler, but can you give me the general scope of what you found out here and what we know so far?
Sure. So something pretty interesting about how all of this is connected is based on the lawsuit that was filed earlier this weekend, as well as my conversations that I had with one of the potential half-children of Dr. Wortman, allegedly, is the fact that none of this may have been discovered without genetic testing. In the lawsuit that was filed last weekend, it was a genetic test that revealed that the woman was, in fact, Jewish, and then the dots started to connect. She started learning she had half-brothers, half-sisters that were all Jewish and that all had some connection to Dr. Wortman, whether their parents saw Dr. Wortman in the 80s. And even the woman that was in the lawsuit that filed the lawsuit last weekend says Dr. Wortman was her OBGYN for 10 years. And she had no, I guess, inkling until the genetic testing that there could have been a possible connection. She was told, according to the lawsuit, that it was that she was helped conceive by a anonymous donor that was a medical student. And then through testing and finding her half-brothers and sisters, a half-brother was able to test, do a DNA test with one of Dr. Wortman's children that he raised in his first marriage, and found out that there was, in fact, a DNA connection there. So the fact that, you know, a lot of them probably, according to the conversations I've had and according to the lawsuit, probably would not have known without this genetic testing, I thought was extremely interesting. And also just the mental toll. I could tell by when I interviewed Mr. C.J. Lohr a couple days ago, you know, I could tell he was getting a lot off his chest. This took a lot of mental toll on a lot of people that were involved in this, not really knowing and then having this discovery later on in their lives and having to, I guess, you know, meet people who they've never met before and find out that they were half brothers and half sisters. Mm-hmm. And, you know, in the lawsuit, there was a lot of in the documents talking about how it increased anxiety, the shock and confusion, increased stress and everything like that. So this did really take an emotional toll on a lot of people involved here.
Tyler, was 13WAM able to get in contact with Dr. Wortman at all?
We did reach out to Dr. Wortman, and Dr. Wortman declined to comment with us as well, obviously with a possible, you know, legal court documents out and everything. He declined to comment for us at the moment.
Okay. And Tyler, before I let you go, are there more questions you have going forward? I mean, do you feel like this story is essentially done for now and we'll learn more in court, or what's next here?
Well, definitely, you know, the big questions here are, you know, and something we hope to, I guess, get answers from Dr. Wortman in the future was how much he did know, because there are different, you know, stories. According to the lawsuit filed, there are, you know, accusations that Dr. Wortman knew the entire time and did not tell certain parents. There are accusations that some parents did know it was Dr. Wortman. Mm-hmm. Sperm that was used, and just, you know, what legally can and can't happen with this. We reached out to the DA's office in terms of possible, you know, criminal charges about this, and they mentioned the fact that it appears related statutes have expired. So It looks like what's next is, you know, the response to the lawsuit from Dr. Wortman, Dr. Wortman's attorneys here, and to see if there is any pushback on some of these accusations.
Tyler is a reporter for 13WAM News. Tyler Brown, thank you for joining the program today and getting us up to speed. Very interesting reporting on this from you and the organization, and thanks for being here.
Thank you for having me. Thank you so much.
All right, that's Tyler Brown. This is really a chance now to hear CJ and Lindsay tell their stories about what it means to go through life this way. Lindsay was on this program about 6 months ago doing exactly that, and frankly has even updates in her own family story that I think are gripping and are important to consider the context of, especially as we look at the allegations against Dr. Wortman. Before we do that, Greg Franklin, I want to do a couple of things with you. First, for the people who hear this story, and they may, in a very misguided way, think, well, okay, there was a lie about who the father was, but the main goal was to have a conception and to have a child. These women got pregnant. Doesn't matter as much. I mean, obviously, I've got my bias here. You're smiling. But, I mean, I've already heard that. People say, he lied, but there was still a child. What's the answer to that?
I think that there are so many levels to this question here. Children are not fungible commodities. Parentage is not a fungible commodity. And it is horrific to think that one could grow up their entire life believing in one, one set of facts, and to find out at age 8 or 10 or 30 or whatever that it turns out everything was completely different. And psychologically, for any child, that would be extraordinarily difficult. As far as how a child was created, if biological mother was aware of who the parentage was and just misrepresented to everybody else, well, that's one thing. That's something that a child would have to deal with his or her mother. But if the mothers were unaware of where the sperm came from, if they were informed it was a donor sperm from a U of R medical student or something like that, and it turned out to be somebody else, I think that could easily be fraud and malpractice and any number of other mals that are out there.
Have we seen cases like that before?
There have not been in New York, as far as I'm aware. There have been in other states, and actually a number of other states have laws against misidentification of genetic material.
So this particular case with Dr. Wortman, at least here, is unique to our area?
As far as I'm aware.
Yeah.
Although I suspect that there probably are other cases out there we just don't know about.
C.J. Lohr, can you take me through what you have known about or what you have thought about who your father is, what you grew up thinking, and how this has progressed then?
Sure. And thanks for having me on the show again.
Sure.
So my father, when I say father, I guess I'm talking about my social father, the guy I thought my father was.
Mm-hmm.
His name was Carl J. Lohr Sr. That's why I go by CJ. And he was very sick. He was so sick that he couldn't conceive naturally. And he was a type 1 diabetic. Now, my whole life, my mother would take me to the doctor, you know, and the topic of, you know, your paternal medical history comes up. And she would tell the doctor that my father was a man who died at 36 years old of a heart attack as a result of being a type 1 diabetic. And that caused me to have to go through a lot of unnecessary things as a kid. Now, to me, when people say, you know, yeah, you were conceived, aren't you happy to be alive? Yes, absolutely. But I would have liked to go through life knowing the truth. Because the way I did it is almost like running a marathon and then finding out at the very end you could have taken a cab. It's pretty stressful to think your father is a man who died at 36 of a heart attack. And that can cause other issues. So I kind of got off track there.
No, that's okay. Well, let me just kind of put a fine point on that. When you grow up thinking your father, your biological father, died at 36 of a heart attack, you may be thinking about how what that portends for your own health, right?
Well, it's called a nemesis date. Psychologists have a name for it. When you have a same-sex parent die at a young age, in your head, you're going to feel like you're going to die at a young age too.
How much did you think about that when you were growing up?
When I was 23 years old, it turns out it was a panic attack, but I was so nervous about it that I literally was in a panic, and I thought I was having a heart attack, just like my father. And I was living in Florida. My family was here in Rochester. And I was in Florida alone, like, holy cow, what am I doing here? I'm in the hospital. And, yeah, you know, they explained to me, it's a panic attack. And I learned a lot about myself that day. That was a valuable day. But, you know, still, I called my mother up, hey, I'm having a heart attack, just like that. And, you know, at that point, I'm a man. And, you know, you have to tell people the truth. When the doctor asks you about your family's medical history, the name on your birth certificate is not a place to put your emotions. It's a place to put the paternal side of your genetics for medical purposes.
Well, CJ, when I first saw your story on 13 Wham, Tyler Brown and Jenny Ryan, with their reporting, I admit the one thing that I was a little confused about, and I'd like if you could share a little bit more about this. I sometimes in commercial television news, you're a little limited with time, but they mentioned, and they had a soundbite with you where you mentioned that you always sort of thought something was up with Dr. Wortman, not just because you look like him, but you thought something was up there. And that may be very curious for you to elaborate if you could.
I don't remember what I was saying when that was said, but as far as I give me a little more context.
I'm curious to know how we got to this point where you looked at Dr. Wortman thinking, okay, I mean, this is probably
how I figured it was him.
Yeah.
Well, that was kind of done for me. I was lucky because I think I was number six or seven. I think I might've been number six. There was a group before me that already had found each other. There were five or six of them. And the night I got my ancestry results, I got a phone call from one of them, and they basically told me all of this. I didn't have to do a lot of thinking. And they even said, like, look at the picture. You look the most like them.
Mm-hmm.
So I was like evidence supporting their theory that they already had.
And you really do look like him. I mean, the picture that 13 yeah. Wham used, I mean, it's pretty striking. And what you told 13 Wham was that this really set you in sort of an emotional tailspin. But tell us more about that. What goes through your mind when it starts to occur to you that the story of who your father has always been to you is maybe not the truth.
When I might have, well, you know, as a man, you know, and I'm sure you guys can relate, when you look at the way that you behave, whether it be the way that you walk or talk or your body language, anything about you, a part of that, you associate that with your father because you want to be like your father inside. I think that's pretty typical for men. We want to be like our father. Even if we hate our fathers, we go, ah, damn it, I'm my father. But, you know, so to me, I'm 37 today. You said I was 35.
Oh, I'm sorry. Okay. Yep.
I hate to admit it. I'm 37 today.
Nothing wrong with that, man.
I was 35 when I found out this stuff. So yeah. I'm sitting there at 35 years old going, oh, wait, I thought I spoke that way because my father spoke that way. I'm having a huge identity crisis now. And yeah, it was emotionally crippling. I mean, I can't even stress that enough. I'm very lucky that I had a support system in place. I had a great therapist who I already, you know, I think therapy is a luxury. I think everyone should try. I've been doing it for a long time.
Amen.
It helps me grow. But I'm so thankful that I had Deb is my therapist name. Shout out. She was there to help me get back on the great trajectory I was already on, but it did. It derailed the heck out of me.
What have you learned about your siblings? How many do you think you have, and how are they doing with this?
We're calling it somewhere between 9 and 10, depending on one thing.
Okay. Okay.
We're not sure about one.
Okay. And so
it's,
9 or 10.
It's probably a lot more. If we were able to find this many, given the numbers, we project 60 to 70 are around here.
Wow. 60 to 70.
Well, I figure about 17% of people have taken a DNA test. If we found between 9 and 10, you know, I mean.
So you're just doing math.
I'm a real estate guy, but somebody's a mathematician around here.
Wow.
And they can figure out the number, but.
Wow. Okay, so I have so many questions, and a lot of this is based on our conversations with Lindsay 6 months ago, and we're going to talk to Lindsay in just a second. But, you know, different people respond in different ways, but some want to meet their siblings if they can. Some are pretty invested in finding out how many and what can I learn about them? Can we build relationships? Are they nearby? What was your approach to that, CJ?
Well, unfortunately for me, when I was brought into the group, I wasn't actually brought into the group. They had already met the six of them had already kind of met. They were spending time with each other. They brought all their parents together. Everyone met and had like a party. They all met in New York. They met in another place. And by the time I came around, they were kind of like emotionally solidified in this pod that they had created. And they basically said, look, we're not taking new members.
Oh.
One of the siblings met with me for coffee. It was really uncomfortable because she felt uncomfortable because the other siblings were like, no, we don't want new siblings. And it was an emotional mess because now I'm finding this out. Now I'm being rejected by the group. Right. So rejection hurts. But over some time, we've kind of worked through that. I'm talking to a few of them. And then there's a new sibling that came after me who I'm kind of, you know, him and I kind of have our own little pod, I suppose. And then there was a Dr. Wortman's acknowledged daughter. I don't know if she wants her name used, but
that's okay. Then don't use it. Yeah, that's okay. Yeah.
But her, you know, she's a sweetheart and she's really kind of made me feel, you know, good. And she's, you know, so it's like, and here's the thing, you know, we know there's more out there. So, you know, the more that come, the different, it'll look different.
You have said that there has to be a way to agree on how donor-conceived children get the facts about their life. And you have said that essentially at the age of 18, at least by 18, you need to be told this is who your father is.
And that's legal speak. Now, from just a being a person perspective, you should not start a relationship with anybody based on a lie, whether it be your child, your girlfriend or boyfriend, husband or wife. You shouldn't start the foundation of a relationship with a lie, especially this big of a lie about who you are. It's just, to me, you know, I know you have an attorney on the show today, so I'll just speak morally. You know, there's just no reason to do that to somebody. For what? So that someone can feel gratification that they're a parent. I mean, you're still a parent, but don't lie to a child about his genetic makeup, who he really is as a person, his blood. Kids need to know, even if you don't know who the donor is, give them some idea. Hey, look, you might have half siblings out there. Don't date them. If someone looks a lot like you, be careful.
The attorney agrees with you.
Well,
thank you, counselor.
And in a moment, I'll ask Greg a little bit more about maybe what the law can do here. But CJ, when you think about the moral side of this, as you say, and the frustration and the pain that you have felt, is that directed more at Dr. Wortman? Is it directed at your mother? I mean, how do you feel about it?
Obviously, I'm very angry with my mother. I won't try to hide that. But for Dr. Wortman, it's him and the medical community that I have this grievance with. It's just that your birth certificate is your very first medical document. And Dr. Wortman was absolutely at my birth. I have photo proof. He was there. And at that point, he was, you know, the attorney can speak to this. He wasn't my doctor. I wasn't a person at that point in the eyes of the law. But he defrauded me when he put on my birth certificate that my father was my father, because he wasn't. And I'm not saying that because I'm mad at doctors. It's just, for me, it comes down to I should have had my medical records accurate. My mother didn't choose to tell me the truth. And what if my mother had died? What if I never found this out?
So Greg Franklin, who's an adoptions and assisted fertility attorney with Ashcraft Franklin and Young, first of all, what do you make of his sort of a plea, not just, well, I mean, yes, on the moral side, but also on the legal side, that people have a right, at least by the time you turn 18, to be given this information? What do you think?
I agree. I think that there has been, over the decades, in adoptions, adoption used to be hidden. It used to be something that nobody would talk about. People wouldn't even tell their children that they had been adopted. And fortunately, we have come a ways in that to make it more socially acceptable and normal. And it is now certainly recommended that every adoptive child know as early as possible who they are and where they came from. And with open adoptions today, we're having relationships and certainly medical information, biographical information from biological parents. In a situation like this, I feel so badly for CJ that it's like bait and switch. His whole life he grew up believing one thing, and it turns out that it's something else. I don't know what the legal obligation is for Dr. Wortman. I don't know if what he should have done at the time, and whether or not there was participant in the biological mother agreeing to use Dr. Wortman's sperm instead of the person she had maintained it was. But in terms of honesty and truthfulness, I think every person deserves to know who they are and where they came from. New York has recently opened adoption registries. For many years, adoption records were sealed and adoptees couldn't know who biological parents were. There is now an ability for people to find out where they came from and who they are.
Let me ask you a question carefully, because what I want to do is ask this in a general way. I don't want to ask you if you think Dr. Wortman committed fraud in the same way CJ did, because there's a lot we don't know about the case, et cetera. Dr. Wortman has chosen not to talk to media to sort of defend himself. I suspect eventually he'll defend himself, and everybody deserves a chance to do that. But generally speaking, in a case like this, could there be a legal claim of fraud here?
I think it depends on what the relationship and agreement was among the participants. Mm-hmm. If a woman agrees to be inseminated by a man, then there's not fraud. She agreed. The issues are whether, if she agreed that she was going to be inseminated with donor sperm from a clinic in Albany or something like that, and she got a biographical background on who the sperm donor was and height and ethnic background and lineage and everything else, and it turns out it was the doctor himself, I think that, in theory, could be fraud.
So I want to turn to Lindsay Robel, who brought this entire issue to our radar in a really compelling conversation with some of her siblings 6 months ago. So, Lindsay, when we talked then, you knew, I think, that you were one of 28 in your family. By the way, I should say, we'll talk about Lindsay's connection with Dr. Wortman, but it is not parentage. So at the time, what you were learning was that you had at least 27 or 28 siblings. What do you know now? How many, Lindsay?
So depending on when we talked, we've had a big year as a family, but we are now, there are 32 of us from my parents' donor at this point. We found our most recent addition on Memorial Day weekend, and she is, you know, wonderful as usual. We've had a busy year. I believe we've found six so far in 2021.
Okay, and when you hear CJ's story, what comes to mind for you, Lindsay?
Yeah, well, first, I just want to, you know, praise the way he's speaking about birth certificate fraud, because that's, you know, an issue that I feel very strongly about as well. And CJ, when you said that a birth certificate is a place for medical information, not emotions, I wholeheartedly agree with that. That's excellent phrasing.
You're
right on. And, you know, obviously my story is a bit different. I was also lied to about my parentage. I was also led to believe that the man who raised me, my social father, was my biological father. But, you know, the compounded trauma of the finding out that the donor was in fact your mother's fertility doctor is something I don't know much about, but I do know
it makes me feel like my conception was a felony, basically.
Yeah, I can see that. And the attorney that you know is on as well said that this maybe a first in New York State, but he's sure that there are other cases we're unaware of. I can tell you there are like big Facebook support groups for donor conceived people. And I checked before I came on today because there is a subgroup from one of the big groups that is specifically for people who were conceived using their mother's fertility doctor's sperm. And that group has 88 members as of today. So this is a lot more common than people think it is and than people realize it is. And, you know, Dr. Wortman, the lawsuit against him, I do just want, you know, to make sure that we really give gravity to what, you know, that poor woman has been through with finding out that her biological father had also been her gynecologist for 10 years, because that's an additional level of trauma to this that is absolutely unspeakably horrifying. Yeah. And, you know, we can talk about, I was a patient of Dr. Wortman's. We can talk about that later. Yeah, I mean, CJ's experience is different than mine in a lot of ways, but also very similar to mine in a lot of ways. And I, you know, relate very heavily to a lot of the emotional trauma that he's describing from being lied to your whole life about your parentage.
Lindsay, do you, I think I know based on our last conversation, but do you want to say any more, I guess, about what CJ says should be made available to people? In other words, at the very least, there should be information disclosed to someone when they reach adulthood about who their biological parents are if they have not received that information yet.
Yeah, so I agree. I'm glad that we've, you know, talked a little bit about how with adoption, you know, the science says that children do best when they know as early as possible. And I think that you know, extends to donor-conceived kids, too. I've jokingly referred to myself as half-adopted on a number of occasions. I think, you know, children should be told from such a young age that they never remember the moment that they found out that it is always just part of their story. And I think that starts with, you know, what CJ talked about and what I spoke about last time I came on, which is taking steps to prevent birth certificate fraud. I do not think that it should be legal to knowingly put someone who is not the biological father or the biological mother on the birth certificate. And obviously that gets a little more complicated with like egg donation and surrogacy. But it's, yeah, no, I totally agree with CJ. I think that the fact that anonymity is still legal in the U.S. is horrifying. And
I mean, you can't buy Sudafed without your name going on a list now. You should definitely be, have to have that on record, right?
Yeah, for sure.
Lindsay, when did you first meet Dr. Wortman?
So I became a patient at the Center for Menstrual Disorders, where he worked, in November or December of 2020 to get an IUD placed. And, you know, I chose them specifically because they do conscious sedation for IUD placement, which felt compassionate, right? Because I think it's barbaric that we force women to be awake with minimal pain management for what is generally a really painful procedure.
Can I say, Lindsay, we had a program on that subject a couple of months back, and it was eye-opening, particularly for men who were listening, who did not know what a lot of women have gone through. But yes, go ahead.
It is, I will say the first IUD I had inserted was without pain management, and it was easily one of the most painful experiences of my entire life. So I chose this place because they do conscious sedation. And I met Dr. Wortman in December of 2020 when he placed my IUD. And I, you know, at the time, it occurred to me that I did have some discomfort with being unconscious and having a male doctor do that procedure. But, you know, they assured me a female nurse would stay in the room, whatever. And it, you know, to find this out was horrifying, because I never would have consented to Dr. Wortman putting his hands anywhere near me, not to be graphic, but much less inside of me, had I known and been made aware that he did what I personally feel amounts to sexual assault, to his patients, if, you know, they were unaware that he was using his own sperm, and to his own daughter. And I, when I found this out, because I found this out from a Washington Post article, while I was at work, and I called, the Center for Menstrual Disorders. I called them and was like, "Hey, what?" Like, what is going on? And their response was way less than stellar. They were pretty short with me, kept saying, "You can't believe everything you read on the internet. And what do you want us to do? And there's nothing we can do. We didn't even know until Monday." And what I said to them was, "Okay, you've known since Monday. That's 4 whole days in which you could have emailed your patients and let them know what was going on and given them resources for potential trauma responses to finding this out about their doctor." Because, you know, when you are a gynecologist or an obstetrician or whatever, and you are treating patients, a patient's history of like sexual trauma, sexual assault, sexual abuse really matters. And this is the kind of thing, finding this out about, you know, your gynecologist or your obstetrician, if you do have a history of that trauma, and, you know, even if you don't, is going to be re-traumatizing. And they made no attempt to ensure the safety and the well-being mentally of any of their patient base. And that, to me, is just unacceptable.
Talking to Lindsay Roble about her own experience with Dr. Wortman, she was not Dr. Ortman is not a biological parent of Lindsay, but Lindsay is someone who has talked to us about her own journey as someone. A journey is such kind of a strange word sometimes, but it has been a long road for people who were donor conceived and had to really fight to learn information about who their siblings are, who their parents are, who their father is, and how to get information. And so Lindsay's back with us to talk about these issues from a number of different places. CJ Lohr is a Rochester resident who says he is the biological child of Dr. Morris Wortman. And we reached out to Dr. Wortman. No response. He has not responded or commented to reporters from other organizations as well. Greg Franklin is with us, an adoptions and assisted fertility attorney with Ashcraft, Franklin & Young. And we've got a phone call I want to take. This is Megan in Brighton with her own comments on Dr. Wortman, I think. Go ahead, Megan.
Hi, Evan. Thank you so much for doing this show today. And I just want to say that I am so sorry to hear Lindsay's story and everybody's story. And I feel like what has happened really is traumatic. And as a patient of Dr. Wortman's, finding all of this information out, I started to talk to some of my girlfriends only to realize that they were also patients of Dr. Wortman. And it went from rage to fear because all of us have been put under during procedures with Dr. Wortman, and all of us started to ask the question, if he's capable of lying about something like what he did and that, well, what he's accused of doing, what else is he capable of? And so I'm just, as someone who has been through sexual assault, I feel like there's a huge trigger for me, and not just me, but I can't imagine how many patients Dr. Wortman has had in his career and how much this will trigger a good chunk of us, knowing that he did something, that the trust that was broken is, it just leads to more questions and wondering what happened when I was under and what is really he capable of doing. In my mind, what he did makes him a monster. And it, that's, I guess, more of a comment, and just wondering, you know, where we go from here as far as, you know, how could he ever be trusted again? And all the patients that he has, you know, done procedures on, you know, how are they feeling? I know that I feel traumatized myself from finding this information out. And I was never contacted by the clinic either to say, you know, this, just to even give us the knowledge that this is what the charges against him.
Yeah, Megan, your concern as a patient, as a past patient of Dr. Wortman, you know, you come from a different place from CJ. Lindsay had a similar experience and a reaction as you. And the question that people may have, everyone may have a different view of what the consequences should be for a situation like this. Again, these are allegations. Dr. Wortman has a right to defend himself. I suspect he will. I don't know. He has not responded to us.
Yeah. Right.
But let me ask all three of Megan, Lindsay, CJ. Megan, before I let you go, I appreciate your phone call. What do you want to see happen next here?
Well, I definitely would hope that he would lose his license and not be able to practice medicine. I would also hope that the clinic would reach out to their patients and let us know what's going on. And I would also wonder if, you know, if there's going to be some sort of support for his patients and some sort of action that we could take, just knowing that, you know, if he is accused of this crime and is proven guilty, I mean, that the breakdown in trust is so severe that I feel like that I'm emotionally scarred. You know what I mean? You have to trust your doctor. And when you lose that trust, that's like one of the most precious things that you can have. And I feel sick about it. And I feel like I'm emotionally affected. I can't stop thinking about it. It's very upsetting to me.
I appreciate your call, and you know, I only wish you peace in dealing with this going forward. Thank you for the phone call, Megan.
Thank you, Evan.
Lindsay, do you agree with her assessment on what should happen next?
Yeah, absolutely, 100%. I think, you know, as much as I have problems with and dislike the U.S. prison system, that's where I'd like to see him. I feel very, very similarly to Megan, that this is traumatizing. This is violating. Like, even,
you know, if I didn't have the additional trauma of the donor conception part of this, just as a woman, it is deeply violating. And I know for me, this is going to really impact my future because there's no way. There is no way I'm ever going to be able to see a male physician ever again. I can't. And this is, yeah, it's violating. It's traumatizing. I think he should be definitely, I think he should lose his license at bare minimum. And yeah, it's, I think that what he's done is horrifying. I agree with Megan that he is a monster, and I think that the consequences for his choices need to be severe.
CJ Lore, what consequences would you like to see here?
I'm not here to comment on that. All I can tell you is I hope that people hear this, and if they're going to utilize donor conception, that this would influence them, you know, what we've been saying here today. My only hope is that we're influencing people to begin your relationship with your children with the truth, because eventually it's all going to come to the surface. They're going to find out anyway. So the way to establish trust is to start things out the right way so kids can know their truth. And kids deserve to know their truth for practical reasons, like in the preventing incest and knowing true medical histories, and for emotional reasons, like properly, you know, identifying yourself with your true heritage and your true background.
CJ, when we talked to Lindsay about her story, you know, she was, just as you are, very open about how emotionally difficult it was, and then a process of trying to learn more, heal in different ways, and decide where you can, you know, maybe have the space to build relationships, whether it's with siblings that she didn't know she had, whether it's with a biological father. That has been made so much, I mean, that is a totally different scenario for you because of the situation that does make it different than Lindsay's. But I can't even imagine what it would be like if your biological father called you and wanted to talk. I mean, does that conversation even have a chance of happening in the future?
Well, look, I mean, you know, I'm sitting here, I sent him a message. You know, any guy wants to know their dad. A man wants to know their father. I sent him a message in the beginning of COVID. He sent me back the wave emoji with a, and then he blocked me. So, you know, more rejection. It's been awesome. So look, you know, if you want to talk about traumatizing, that sucked. Getting a wave emoji and a block, you know, so look, it sounds like this guy has a lot of problems going on right now. Karma seems to be effective. I mean, look, I've never shut anybody out, but that guy's got enough problems right now.
Lindsay, how are you doing on you know, sort of in your own life as you work through different relationships, whether it's with, you talked about your biological father last time you were on, or with siblings. How is that going?
Yeah, it's good. I mean, I, you know, unfortunately, my siblings had a meetup in North Carolina earlier in August, and I couldn't go. I had some unfortunate medical stuff happening with my dog. But, you know, people are continuing to meet up, continuing to get to know each other and build relationships. And you actually just reminded me that my bio dad texted me yesterday and I forgot to respond. It's very, I mean, definitely a different situation than CJ's. But I mean, for example, I found this out and immediately went to my group chat with all of my sisters, and, you know, they were all just so supportive and so sweet, and that, you know, it's really nice to have like a network of sisters that I can rely on when something traumatizing like this happens. They're great.
Let me grab a phone call, and then there's a few things I want to touch on with Greg before we lose the hour here. This is Robert in Fairport. Hi, Robert. Go ahead.
Yeah, thanks for taking my call. You know, this whole case, as far as being a totally revolting, kind of medical ethics kind of argument or lack of just kind of obliterates the whole concept of anonymity when it comes to sperm donors. I mean, with all these genetic tests these days, you can't really pass that off as being anonymous anymore, because anyone can track down, you know, the genetic source of the sperm. It just seems like whatever laws were created for this, the technology is kind of rendered a moot.
I wonder how our guests feel about that. First of all, Greg Franklin, what do you think?
I agree with you. I think that the technology has definitely outpaced people's expectations, and there are very few secrets that are able to be kept anymore.
CJ, what do you think?
I think that the best way for a child to have a healthy childhood is to have two parents. And I hope this discourages men from donating sperm, because in my eyes, society is going to benefit from men and women having to get along in order to create a child and then agree on how to raise it together. And I'm not a righty, but this is a centrist opinion of, you know, what we're doing by giving anonymous people. We're just saying to women, hey, you don't like men? Fine, go do it yourself. But kids need fathers, and they need to know who they are. It really benefits society when kids know who their father is and they're a part of their life. So I hope that that's true. I hope they stop doing it.
Lindsay Robert in Fairport thinks that technology, genetic testing, that will make it much more hard for much more difficult for people to remain anonymous with this. What do you think?
Yeah, I think that anonymity is no longer possible and hasn't been for quite a while. I think that banks that continue to try and sell a promise of anonymity not only are doing something unethical in that anonymity is unethical, but are lying to their clients. And no, I don't think anonymity should be legal, and not only because it's no longer possible, but because morally, that's the right thing to do. Donor anonymity is a moral failing that, you know, we're engaging in as a society. But I do also just want to say, to CJ's point, that I think we should be very, you know, careful how we talk about family structures, because, you know, lesbian parents who want to have children are absolutely valid. And single mothers by choice who want to have children are valid. And a lot of my siblings come from families like that. And I just, you know, there are ways for donor-conceived children to have a relationship with their biological parent that do not necessitate a mother and father family structure.
And in a world with a lot of starving children, there's enough children where everyone can have a child without having to genetically manipulate children in a petri dish. There's enough children. Everybody can have a child. Shoot, I bet everybody can have two, and we don't have to mess with people this way. We're not designer babies. There's children that already exist, babies that are waiting to be born that everyone is welcome to. And we need to maybe fix those and make those roads wider. But have donor conception, but don't expect anonymity, because a child deserves to know who that man is.
Greg Franklin. Go ahead, Lindsay. Yep.
I just wanted to say, you know, I don't want to speak for the adoptee community, because I know that they have their own separate set of ethical issues that they face. But I do just also want to give them a shout out, because there is a lot of really great solidarity happening between the adoptee community and the donor conceived community. And for people who are interested in the moral and ethical issues with adoption, and especially infant adoption, I would recommend you check out an account called Wild Hearts Collective on TikTok.
Wild Hearts Collective on TikTok. Greg, before we lose the hour, just what would you let people know about resources that are out there, maybe the kind of work that you do to help people if they get confused about their rights, the law, et cetera?
I think that the one point that before I answer your question, the one point I want to make is that we shouldn't be confused or dissuaded from having families because of an aberration like what is alleged with Dr. Vortman, that there are ethical adoption agencies, there are ethical infertility clinics, Strong Fertility, Rochester Infertility up at Park Ridge, CNY Fertility. They're very good resources that are ethical and moral and do this the right way. If we have donor registries that can be established nationwide where egg and sperm donors can all register and allow children to find them in the future if there's not openness, which I will also encourage as well, there are ways to do this the right way, and we shouldn't be dissuaded from having families and expanding our families simply because of a situation like what's going on right now.
I appreciate you being here, and I appreciate the legal expertise. And I just want to say to CJ first, I'm sorry what you've gone through, but I do think your story will continue to help raise awareness about the donor conceived community and issues facing this community. And I wish you luck, CJ, in all of the relationships that you decide to try to build or rebuild and your own future. Thank you for making time for the program, CJ.
Appreciate you, sir. Have a good day.
At CJ Lohr, Rochester resident, who says he is the biological child of Dr. Morris Wortman. Lindsay Robel, same to you. I think you've brought a lot of awareness in our conversations on this and in a very sensitive way. And I think it's been really powerful to people to hear these stories and to maybe reconsider what the law says, but also what our ethics tell us we should be doing. And I wish you luck. Thanks for being with us again.
Thank you so much. And just quick before I go, I want to thank the attorney who's on the show. So much of what we hear from fertility professionals is focused on the rights of the parents, and you have very much focused on the rights of the children, and I just wanted to say I appreciate that, and I appreciate you very much.
Thank you.
Thank you, Lindsay. And that's Greg Franklin, who she's talking about, an adoptions and assisted fertility attorney with Ashcraft, Franklin, and Young, if you want to find him there. Thank you, Greg.
Thank you, Evan.
From the whole team today, including Julie Williams, the best. And the rest is me, Rob, Emery Stein, Megan, all just here working together, and hope that you've got a great weekend ahead of you, and we'll talk to you next week on member-supported public radio.